This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
It's Creature Feature, a spotlight on one of the Wildlife Hospital Dunedin's extra special guests.
And for today's edition of Creature Feature, we welcome back Jordana White from the Wildlife Hospital Trust. And also another special guest this morning, Graham Lowe, joins us in the studio. So I'm curious, Jordana, what are we going to be talking about today?
Morena, Jeff. Today we are going to be talking about fairy prions, or titi wainui.
Okay, I'm going to have to stick my hand up and say you often ask me how much I know about the creatures. I know nothing about this creature. Should I be surprised? Should you be surprised to hear me say that?
I'm not surprised, and I would say that even for us, it's quite a rare patient. So don't worry about that. So I had a look through our records. Last year, we had exactly zero fairy prions in hospital, and in 2022, we had only two. So it's quite unusual for us. But I think that people in Dunedin should know about fairy prions, so we should all learn about them together because we're very lucky to have some here.
All right. Perhaps you could introduce our other special guest today.
Yes, I've brought with me the person that I know who knows the most about fairy prions. So this is Graham Lowe. He's an absolute legend, conservation legend. He knows more about biodiversity. He's forgotten more about biodiversity than I'll ever know in my whole life. So quite impressive. And Graham runs the Prion Fence Project up at the St. Clair Cliffs, which is a forest and bird project. And Graham, you've been working for how long have you been working with prions at the fence?
Well, the fence came second. The first thing was discovering a ledge which had prions on a cliff near Tunnel Beach. And this is the only place in the world where fairy prions live on the mainland. Everywhere else they're on rock stacks, small islands, anywhere that's free of rats. They used to be on the mainland, but humans brought rats and rats ate them.
And Graham, when was this discovery?
1992.
And were you part of that discovery process, or what? How did you get roped into all of this?
So I was working for DOC at the time, and we were doing marine reserve stuff, and it was a particularly calm, frosty winter's day when the sea was flat, and we took our boat around the Tunnel Beach coastline. We swam into every cave and every little beach looking for blue penguins. And I looked up and I saw seabird burrows on this ledge. And a little while later, I sat at the top of the cliff and heard sooty shearwaters flying around. And then I eventually got up nerve to abseil down with a friend, and it was fairy prions that were in the burrows.
And did you recognise them as such? Were they familiar to you?
Yeah. I've been an active scuba diver. I've done a lot around Fovo Strait, and they're on many of the Fovo Strait islands, and you can see big flocks of them down there.
Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the characteristics of this bird, how it might relate to some of the other seabird life around.
So it's one of the petrel family. In other words, it's in the same family as the albatross, but this guy is small. They're only a little bit bigger than the beak of the royal albatross.
Hence fairy.
And it's fairy, yes. Very light on the wing, very timid. So you go to a rat-free rock stack and it'll be right on the edge. And even storm petrels and diving petrels, which are smaller, get better places than they do. They live in burrows, so they avoid getting eaten by skuas and black-backed gulls who can swallow them whole. They're that small.
Right.
And they only come to land at night time because that's when they're safe from those bird predators.
So a number of vulnerabilities and hence the fence project. Tell us about that.
Well, that really came about, and it's in a video on YouTube, because I took a 69-year-old friend down. I lowered him down the cliff and then hauled him back up again. And he said, "Oh, thunder wench." And I said, "Oh, that's going to be heaps of drama." And then I thought, well, we'll try and get them to the top of the cliff. And so we built a predator-proof fence above some caves that have got fairy prions near Cargill's Castle.
He's really bearing the lead on this because this project is so ambitious. If you go out to Cedar, you see photos of it that show you the angle of this fence. I mean, it is basically just on a cliff top, and it is precarious. I have seen sort of photos and documentation of them building the fence, and it's really, really impressive. Even just to get the materials out to the top of the cliff seemed pretty crazy to me. I mean, I think Graham's probably the only person that could look at that cliff and go, yeah, put a fence up there, that'll do.
Well, what I learned out of that was next fence, in a flat paddock.
Right. Yes, good call.
So there's maintenance of the fence too, right? I mean, this is something you have to continually attend to, I imagine.
It's not too onerous, but rust never sleeps, and it's fully exposed to southwesterly gales. It's a very saline environment.
All right. Jordana, back to you. How is it that you came to have a fairy prion at Wildlife Hospital?
Well, it's firstly very unusual for us to have a fairy prion in July. Typically, we would get the fledglings in January, maybe February, so generally in the summer, almost always in the summer. This one, however, was found on St. Kilda Beach, so it was storm-wrecked or got disoriented with lights. It was quite emaciated, so it came in at 77 grams, which should be more like 120 grams. So it was already quite in quite rough shape, which is possibly one of the reasons it did end up on the beach in the first place. Sue from Bird Rescue Dunedin was called out, and she went and picked it up, saw what it was, and brought it to the Wildlife Hospital.
What sort of numbers are we looking at, Graham, in this particular area?
Well, just to point out how rare it is to have fairy prions wrecked. At the colony, I've banded close to 3,000 of them. There's about 500 or 600 birds associated with the colony, even though there's only about my 100 nest boxes and about 50 natural burrows at work. But there's a lot of unemployed birds on the surface.
The vulnerabilities you mentioned, other birds, one, but the others are the same vulnerabilities, I guess, that Jordana, we've spoken about before.
Time and time again, introduced predators, as Graham mentioned, that's what drove them off the mainland, essentially, other than this one tiny little relic colony. Rats, I imagine stoats would be an issue as well. Sort of the typical song and dance that we talk about most months, yeah.
And Graham, this... You're friends of the prion fence, so you're not alone in this? Is there you have colleagues, helpers, others interested in this conservation work?
There's about 300 people that helped with building the fence.
Wow.
Took almost 2 years to build the fence. You know, to put one post in was basically a day's labour with an easy post. And with the main prion colony where I do monitoring and banding and all that sort of thing, we're now up to 248 people that have been down and seen the prions in situ.
And when he says that, he means abseiling down the cliff.
Yeah.
To be clear, not just peering over the edge.
Jordana, have you done this?
I have not. I have been out to the fence, but not out down to the colony itself yet.
Yeah. Well, I guess the fact that it is so difficult, Jordana, for you to get there would suggest that's helpful in some of the regards to, in terms of the vulnerabilities.
Well, essentially, that's how they've survived. I mean, as Graham mentioned, that this is the only mainland breeding colony, and it's because it is so inaccessible. And really, it takes quite a detective to have found that colony, so it's quite impressive. And I do actually think this project is an example of just yet another thing to how special Dunedin is and how lucky we are with the biodiversity that we have here within the city. And it always astonishes me when people haven't heard about this project, because it is so remarkable and so special that we have this one world's only colony here on the mainland. And it's something to celebrate and definitely something to protect.
And Graham, these present an ongoing opportunity to learn. What have you learnt about this bird? What do you love about it?
Well, I call them the lab rats of seabirds, because unlike sooty shearwaters or yellow-eyed penguins or blue penguins that bite and kick and fuss and scratch and try and kill humans that try and mess with them, these guys, this time of year, they're getting all ramped up for breeding. They won't lay their eggs until the middle of October, but they're already practicing copulating, and they've got their partners sorted out, and they're so wound up that you sit down there in the colony and they'll just walk over you. You pick them up to read their band, and you can put them back down again, and they just carry on.
Jordana, is this an ideal patient, as described by Graham?
You know, it's funny because that's not our experience, but typically, I mean, we would normally not get them at this time of year. They're actually quite vocal and fussy patients to have in hospital in some ways. They don't like to be handled. They will meep at you, but they are quite gentle. I mean, if they're trying to kill us, it's adorable. You know, if they're not doing a good job of it. But they are quite vocal and kind of show their displeasure with being in hospital. We try to turn them around as quickly as possible. They certainly don't thrive in that unnatural environment. So we do try to be as quick as we can with them to get them up to health. We don't even try not to even touch them with our hands. We typically would wear gloves to handle these birds to try to keep their waterproofing intact, because the less waterproof they are, the longer they have to stay in hospital. So that's not ideal. We're quite careful with them as well, even with the feeding. So because we generally get donated large fish, we have to chop them up. We don't feed them pieces of fish because we're quite worried about the mess that might make. So they're just getting that fish smoothie when they're in hospital. So they're getting kind of the 5-star treatment, really soft towels to protect their feet, you know, making sure everything is as comfortable as possible for them so we can get them back out to the fence and released.
Might not want to leave.
Yeah, exactly.
Shall we take a listen to what these birds sound like? So you recognise them from their call?
Yeah, so there's a male and a female calling there. It's the easiest way to tell the sexes apart is by how they talk. They look the same otherwise.
With the work that you have done and the ongoing work, what kind of support do you get for that financially? It must cost to maintain and so forth?
Well, the Cliff Project, because it's sort of out of the realms of everyday life, is a personal hobby. So I train people up with my own equipment and do that all myself. But the fence is supported by Forest and Bird, and so all materials done by Forest and Bird, who's had a substantial bequest from the Marjorie Barclay Trust.
Do you get international interest in what you've done?
Well, I've dispersed people that know about prions right around the world. Every continent's got some prion people that have been to this.
Prion people.
I would like to say also, just from the international front, so my dad, who's definitely listening to this right now and is going to be very excited because Graham is on the program with us, he actually found the YouTube video before he even knew that Graham and I knew each other. And I went, oh, yeah, I know Graham's money. He lives across the street from me. We're neighbors. And he was quite stunned. So, yeah, there's some international reach for sure.
And the YouTube video is what?
It's about the building of the fence. It's like kind of like a mini documentary. Is that right? If it's what I recall.
So you just look up the word fairy prion or an extraordinary fence.
All right. So going forward, I hate that expression, from here on, what's important for us to know about what we can do to continue to preserve the environments that are going to foster the health of populations here?
Well, so far they've coped with the El Ninos, La Ninas and marine heat waves, but sometime that's not going to work. So reducing your burning of fossil fuels is really important. The other thing is artificial lights, particularly at sea. That's a lot of what's called deck strike. Birds in misty nights crash into vessels.
All right. Is this your only passion project or are there others? I suspect there might be.
I love the sea. I love nature.
We could probably talk to you again, Graham.
He's a true bird nerd, without question.
Oh, I'm wider than a bird nerd.
Do you still have your patient on board, or have they gone back?
No, we do. I'm very sorry to report that the patient did not survive. So unfortunately, as I mentioned, that was quite an emaciated state that it arrived in. It was in pretty bad shape by the time we got it. So yeah, sorry. It's a sad story about this particular bird, but it did get, you know, given the best chance at survival by getting into care. But typically we do have quite good success with the fledglings that we get, and we return them to Graham, who comes and picks them up and chauffeurs them back to the fence for release into a burrow. But yeah, unfortunately, this one didn't quite make it. And I will just also say another shout out for getting involved in trapping and pest control. It can only help all of the different native species, but including fairy prions as well.
All right. And you can follow the group on Facebook. You have a Facebook group, Fairy Prion Fence. Easy enough to find. Take a look, like it. You'll continue to learn, no doubt, about what the rest of the team is learning, and perhaps you might want to be one who abseils down that cliff face to just take a closer look very carefully. Really nice to meet you, Graham. Thanks so much for coming and joining us here for today's edition of Creature Feature. And Jordana, we look forward to catching up with you again in 4 weeks' time.
Kia ora.
Thank you.
The Wildlife Hospital Dunedin treats sick and injured native New Zealand species right here in the heart of Aotearoa's wildlife capital. Their expert veterinary team patches up more than 500 patients every year, returning the majority of them back to the wild where they belong. You can learn more about the hospital, including ways to support this charitable trust, at wildlifehospitaldunedin.org.nz. Or follow their Facebook page for more fabulous creature content.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.